And now, nationally recognized financial experts Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Hansen McClain Advisors. It's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you're here with us on this July 23rd, 24th weekend as we broadcast our program. I'm glad you were with us. Myself and Pat here, we've been doing this show 21 years.
Yeah. And we work with people.
Almost 22 years.
Is that right?
Is that right?
I don't remember.
No. It's more than 20 because before my daughter was born.
But we work.
Maybe 21. Yeah, so almost about 22 years now.
We work with people just like yourself.
Yeah. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner. If you're new to the program, where have you been?
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And feel free to give us a call.
So broadcasting almost 22 years out of Sacramento.
And you'd like to join the show. It's 888-2-HANSEN. That's 888-242-6766. So if you have a financial question regarding your 401k or IRA, taxes, you have a estate planning, you're fighting with the relatives over money or estates, or we'll help you in the decision-making
process.
You know,
it's interesting. We have a good program lined up for you today. We're pretty excited about it. I received an email from a client not too long ago. It was an interesting situation because it really got me. It got me thinking. It reminded me of some reality, and it's this: a lot of people who accumulate wealth during their lifetime do so as much out of looking for some security, out of fear, as much as anything else. And so, well, I've noticed a lot of people are great savers. They're great savers, not necessarily because they say, no, I want to save a little money now so I can have an enjoyable future. They don't think about so much of, I'll be able to spend the money in the future.
That's right.
They save because they think, no, I need to save. It's an important discipline. It's an important thing to do in life to save so I have money in case something goes wrong.
A security.
Yes.
I'm that guy.
That is you for sure.
That is absolutely me.
And so what happens over time... They're young, they save, there's not much there. But as time goes on, they suddenly have more and more money saved. But because that the security number is a moving target.
That's correct.
Oftentimes people get, even at retirement time, when they've saved more than they need for retirement, sometimes they'll continue to save. Maybe they have some pension or Social Security.
Or not spend any
part of it. Or not spend any of their money. Because they're afraid.
Or even all the earnings from the money.
Correct. Because maybe next year there won't be any earnings.
That's right.
So I need my security. So it's an interesting balance. And I think it's important for each of us to get a good understanding of how we view money, how we react to money.
How you as an individual.
Yes.
And you as a couple.
And if you're married, it's great if there's two different type of spouse. I mean, if one has been saving, look for the security aspect, it might be good if you're married to someone who can enjoy the money a little more. If two people are just enjoy the money and
can create some conflict.
If there's conflict in marriage, as always.
Whose?
mean, and about finances, there's typically conflict.
Yes, there's conflict.
But I think it's important to realize because I'd received an email from someone and he basically said, he was kind of asking my advice on whether they should spend on this particular thing or not. And as I was reading through it, I thought, I just had my hunch was that it's coming down to a security thing. And
whether they spending the money would jeopardize the security that the money provided. Is that?
Yeah. What it got well, down? It was kind of, you've got the security here. Now it's, you know, it's finding the right balance between husband and wife. The wife wanted to do one thing. He wanted to do something different. Surprise, surprise. But I think if you're in one of those that your primary motivation for saving has been for this financial security.
Not to improve your lifestyle in retirement.
It was not a delayed gratification thing, right?
It was.
I'm afraid
yeah. of what the world could do.
And you find yourself now at, say, retirement age, and you've got, frankly, more than enough assets that you'll ever spend in your lifetime, it's probably a good time to start thinking about what is it you want to, like these, what would you like these dollars to do? And it might be that you don't spend much of it. That's okay too. That's your money. You can do whatever you want with your money.
That's okay.
Your money
makes you whatever. That makes you happy. If frugality is a way of life and you like that way of life, then that's okay. That's all. There's nothing wrong with that.
Unless you are, I did have a family member that whenever I'd see him, he was one of those guys that always bragged about the deal he got. And the deal he got was always at someone else's expense.
Well, that's not.
But he loved that. It was like his highest value in life. I thought, I didn't quite. Well,
maybe the person telling the other side of this story was saying exactly the same thing.
He was always getting taken. The last one.
I really talked this guy down. And then the other guy's thinking, I was so glad to get rid of it.
But one thing, it's always important to remember that you can't take these dollars with you. And if you accumulate wealth, having some plan for these dollars at your death. And I think Warren Buffett is actually, on a grand scale, he's one of those that he's peculiar because he's not in business for the lifestyle. It's not for him. It's not about what money can buy. He lives in the same modest home in Omaha.
That's what they say. He probably, I'm guessing he doesn't spend most of his time.
He does own a big house in Laguna on the Laguna Niguel.
That's every time you go to Omaha, Nebraska, everyone wants to drive you around this little hovel. Go, that's where Warren Buffett stays. Like he's living in a cave. Like, I doubt that's the real truth.
Huh?
I don't think he's spending the majority of time in that little house in Omaha, Nebraska. I've seen it four or five times. Every time I've gone to Omaha, Nebraska, everyone has to drive you by Warren Buffett's house and show it to you, and you got to pretend like it was the first time you've seen it.
That's really interesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Look, it's got a roof and a door and windows. Anyway, your point, sorry.
I thought that was an okay example because he doesn't I have no idea what
lifestyle. That's my point.
Okay. But he likes to portray the fact that he's
media,
this kind of a frugal guy.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, yeah, Get me the old suit. I'm talking in public.
When he's through talking. Check out that designer custom made thing.
When he's through talking, these minions come running out, custom fit him.
He's got his
hair.
Gucci bag.
They're like, hey, rough up my hair before I talk in public.
Give me the old suit. With a button-down collar. Fancy silk stuff.
Anyway, so as much of an example you tried to make, I get the point, which is the money is a tool and whatever makes you happy with it. If security makes you happy, then manage it for that happiness. Is that what you're trying to say?
Just to come in, I think I have an understanding of what motivates you financially.
All right. So
because oftentimes, and sometimes just because we're bent a certain way, sometimes it makes sense for us to, that might not be our highest value. Because sometimes we make decisions with our finances. Maybe we spend more than we should. That doesn't mean it's just okay if we feel good about spending more than we should continue spending.
That is correct.
Right? The opposite might be, you might be at a point where the money is actually more of a burden than it should be for you. Maybe it's consuming too much. Maybe that sense of security.
As I tell my clients all the time, look, when your material possessions own you and you no longer own them, then the relationship has changed. So had a client, vacation home, early 80s. I said, if this vacation home is now becoming a burden and you're not using it for pleasure, get rid of it. You no longer are receiving utility out of this possession. Get rid of it.
And what do they do?
They're actually considering it. They've had a couple vacations home. They've taken my advice in the past. So I ran across this great article about a 58 and a 69-year-old, Debbie and Michael Campbell, 58 and 69, that live in Seattle. They rented their house out in Seattle. They reduced their monthly expenses, and they're traveling the world staying at Airbnbs.
So how old are they?
58 and 69.
Have you done an Airbnb?
I have not.
I have.
Oh, what did you think of
it? I rented a house in Redondo Beach.
I've done a VRBO, vacation rental by owner.
No, this is Airbnb.
But you rented the whole house. You didn't rent someone's room.
That would have been a little weird. Well, actually.
Well, that's how Airbnb works.
No, this was a lady.
Was she there?
She was there to greet us.
Okay.
And then she asked if we were going to need the third bedroom or not. And then we said no.
Okay.
And it was locked. I think that was her personal house.
Oh, got it.
She rented, we rented it for the weekend. And I think she went to go stay with some friends as a way to help make some ends
oh,
meet.
Got it. Got it. She didn't rent the room out to Hannibal Lecter or anything like that.
No. Okay. I rented the whole, most of the whole place. Everything but her bedroom.
Okay. So Airbnb, you can rent the whole house like VRBO, vacation rental by owner, or you can rent out a room.
Yes.
Or a couch or, I don't know, wherever you sleep in these places.
If you'd like the entire bed.
Right. I don't know how it works, but that's not the point. That's not
I do
the,
know how it works. I've got a couple, but rent the whole thing. But you can rent the whole house.
Okay. So I don't know whether, God, you ruined my story.
So what's the story? Does this couple stay in someone's bedroom? In the laundry room, a couch? What is this point of the story?
That they have decided to travel the world, rented their own house in Seattle out. So they have no place to return. Not only to help fund it, but it's a marker, which is if you want to move back to the place that you moved from, it's not a bad idea to keep a house
there
so that you've got your marker so that if prices escalate, you could still come back to the same place. But they've traveling the world. They've been doing this for over a year. They said that they're having a great time. And we're proof that you don't have to let the stuff in the house and the overwhelming task of downsizing delay your dreams. That's what they said. Living proof that you don't have to let your stuff and the house and overwhelming task
there's
of
also
downsizing
that,
dreams.
There's also that website where people like swap houses with people, other people.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, if they're in a desiring area, they will swap the house. For a week, a month.
Yeah.
Swap houses.
I don't want anyone staying at my place.
I don't want to stay in your place either.
It's
not nice though because it's, you know, although it's next to the sewage treatment plant because it's risen a bit and it's always ready to be on wheels.
If it gets really bad, I could just hook it to the back of my truck and move it.
So it's never my house.
Anyway. So
we're having fun in this program.
Yeah. Maybe. So great calls coming up. 1-800-888-242-6766 if you'd like to join the show. That's 888-2-HANSEN. And as always, you can find us on moneymatters.com.
Yeah. So 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of the program. And we do have, as like I said, a good program. It is July, still hot July. Good time, summertime. Good time to be thinking about finances. If you got a question, give us a call. 1-888-2-HANSEN. This is Hanson McClain.
To be part of Hanson McClain's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-242-6766. Back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Two guys, two brains, and one head of hair.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McClain.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, join a little bit of that CC.
Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Talk about financial issues.
Yeah, and take your phone call.
Yeah, 888-2-HANSEN to join the program. And let's go right to the phones. We're talking with Steve in Irvine. Steve, you're with Hanson McClain.
Gentlemen.
Hi, Steve.
Gentlemen, hey, how are you guys?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Question is this. I run a small civil engineering business, and the potential is there for someone to come in and grab me and pay some cash. And, you know, I'm 57 years old, and I may just want to take whatever the money that is and go play golf for the rest of my life.
So you have a civil engineering business. How many are you the sole owner or is it a partnership?
No, I have a partner.
Okay, it's a 50-50 type partner. How's the structure?
Yeah, that's correct, 50-50.
And does your partner know about this? Are you having that discussion with your partner as well?
Oh, no, this would be all in the, you know, on the up and up with him. We're you know, a small firm. We have some pretty good clients, and so, you know, our plan is, and we think we have a pretty good shot, we have some, you know, fairly good clients that I think would be attractive to a larger firm, and I think we could get snapped up.
Okay.
And are you talking with some firms now?
No, we're not.
Okay. So
not yet.
Have you talked to any M&A firms or any attorneys that specialize in these sort of transactions?
Nope, not at all.
So a couple of things to look at. So what's going to happen? with this is they'll give you some consideration up front, some cash up front.
What normally happens,
and you know, there's always outliers, but typically, and for you to maximize your value, you'd get some consideration up front, and then some paid out as an earnout over a period of time, a 1 year or 2 year period of time. Typically, it's based upon how successful everybody is in transitioning the clients,
and how many clients actually come along for the ride, because what they're buying is your employees and your client list, so they want some continuity with you in that process.
Yeah,
so that's
of course, that's understood.
Yeah, and be very, very careful when you're negotiating this on the earnout side of it, because the ability to misconstrue what was agreed on a year or two down the road is pretty it happens pretty often, and you want to make sure that you've got a really, 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 really good attorney on your side. Really good.
Which we do. We have excellent attorneys and accountants and things like that watching over us, because we're just engineers. We don't know about that.
You can tell Steve's been in business a while when it was plural. We've got good attorneys and good accountants.
Yes,
different specialists for whatever the needs are.
Right? So what's your question for us? What to do with the money?
I have this dream. Yeah, exactly. So I have this dream that after taxes, I'm going to walk away with, let's say, $4 million. And so what is the best vehicle for me to leave that in one place, have it pay me every month tax-free, and, you know, be able to go enjoy the rest of my life with my kids and take vacations and all that kind of stuff.
So tell us a little bit about your investment history. So have you invested, I assume you probably have a company, 401k or SEP or something along those lines. How has your portfolio been invested over the years?
Well, it's pretty much the 401k with the mutual fund idea and all that kind of stuff.
Has it been primarily equities or a balanced portfolio of 50-50?
Usually pretty balanced. You know, in the past, very aggressive, and you know, I've kind of dialed it back as we get older. I do have a Roth that, you know, I'm just not able to contribute to, from what I understand, because I make so much money.
And is your home paid for or not?
It is not.
And do you plan on staying in Irvine, or do you plan on moving somewhere?
I do. We love Irvine, and we love to stay here.
Okay. So probably the first thing I would do is probably pay off the home. And the reason being is that money not going out is the same as money coming in. And
you can make – one can make an argument for paying off your home, and one can make an argument for not, right? During this last downturn, I don't know anybody who was foreclosed upon that didn't have a mortgage.
And the reason we like the homes to be paid off is we find actually people, it changes their risk tolerance a little bit.
How big is your mortgage?
It's $3,000 a month.
How much do you owe on it?
Oh, $520.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah, okay. So to generate $3,000 a month, you'd need close to, on a real conservative side, $800,000 sitting in an account, right? In this market, without taking on a lot of risk, unless you want to take on risk.
So the answer to your question: so if you sold this thing for $4 million, and when the tax,
you said after taxes $4 million.
Oh, after taxes $4 million. I think I would probably go with a balanced portfolio. I think that
there's So there's not one vehicle. So there's a few ways to look at this. You could say I'm going to take a portion of this. And make sure it's an 100% guarantee investment, such as I'm going to take a portion and put it in U.S. Treasuries, or portion, maybe even buy an immediate annuity from an insurance company for some portion to give you a kind of a private pension, so to speak. You could go along that line. You could just say, I'm just going to have a real balanced portfolio, knowing that my portfolio is going to go up and down. There's going to be some years it's going to do much better than the income I'm taking, and some years it's going to do less than the income I'm taking. But figure out a realistic withdrawal. How much are you expecting to pull out of $4 million a year? What would be your kind of income?
Well, that's, you know, what I'd love to do is leave it alone. Just let it sit there and stay $4 million, and I live off whatever interest I can make from it.
Yeah, and so what we would like is to see that continue to grow and you live off some interest, so that 20 years from now, when the loaf of bread's 10 bucks instead of 5 bucks, it's not an issue. Of course, I think with $4 million, it's not bread that's going to be the issues. It'll be bigger expenses, like can we afford to take that trip, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
So,
I heard somebody, the reason I'm calling is I heard somebody say, hey, tax-free municipal bonds, and they were talking about something else. And I go, okay, well, I don't know anything about
that. Might make sense for a portion.
It would make sense for a portion. Absolutely. Okay. If you were sitting in our office, we would recommend a portion of it in tax-free
municipal. Maybe 20% or something.
In tax-free muni.
But see, they have their own risk as well. So, for example, municipal bonds are, they're essentially loans to municipalities. So if you buy a municipal bond, right, you're loaning money. So you want to buy a California bond, you're loaning money to California. You want to buy a bond in Irvine, you're loaning money. So, but municipalities carry some of their own risks.
And a lot of the tax-free bonds out there are Puerto Rican tax-free bonds.
Puerto Rican? Wow.
Yeah, from Puerto Rico.
Matter of fact, if you search, good point, if you search for the highest yielding municipal bond funds, they would have been the ones
you would have found them from Puerto Rico. So while municipal bond funds,
it's U.S.
Should be a percentage of your portfolio, then the second question is, what kind of municipal bond funds, right? Should I get ones with
individual bonds?
Should I get ones with
general obligation?
General obligation revenue? What is the, what actually is the length of the bonds? Those are all
the
questions.
I think the key, Steve, is if building a portfolio is similar to how large pensions and endowments and foundations manage their money.
And then stress testing the portfolio so that you know what to expect out of it. So part of our process at Hanson McLean is to stress test portfolios.
And we're not here to plug a firm. This is just kind of...
And what the stress test portfolio, it's not 100% accurate because you don't know until after the fact, but it's predictive of what a particular portfolio will do in certain market conditions. So as much as investment advisors love to talk about the upside of the portfolio, we love to talk about the downside. And the reason is, of the $2 billion plus we manage and the 4,000 clients, and I've been doing this for over 20 years, I have never received a single phone call when the markets are up telling me to slow down and making too much money for my clients. Never once.
Never?
Well, right, of course.
Never.
But, what happened? The statement, man, it's huge.
You want to do is to look at the downside.
Right. Well, I'm sure that since January 1, you've been getting a lot of phone calls that, holy cow, should I go to cash? Should I go to cash? This thing is crashing.
So, you know, that's interesting, yeah. Steve.
Surprisingly.
Not as many as you would expect.
And because of using the stress test and having the clients understand the downside.
Well, we're not all stocks by any means. Highly diversified. Yeah. So.
But having the clients understand the downside. And at the end of the day, the portfolio that is the right one for you is the one you're going to keep through good and bad. That is the right portfolio.
And at this stage in your life, your greatest concern about not getting rich, but it's about not becoming poor, correct? It's about maintaining this.
Right.
You can't afford to blow this.
Yeah.
You don't want to create another civil engineering firm. That was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right? Right?
Yes,
I know.
Yes. A lot of long hours.
We understand we're in professional services, not too dissimilar. Mm-hmm. So we understand what it takes to create a firm. You worked hard for these dollars.
So with that, I would actually err on the more conservative side. And you should do some introspection about how you reacted to the markets in the last time around through the Great Recession.
But I don't think his portfolio should be that much different than, say, CalPERS, the public employee retirement system in the
largest
state.
One in the country. I don't think it
or
should
other
be.
Endowments.
You should treat it like a pension fund.
And highly diversified. Because you never know. Unless you predicted that oil was going to go from 100 and some odd to $30 a barrel. If you predicted that, forget diversification, follow your gut.
Actually, if you predicted that, you should get your own radio show.
That's right.
I'm working on it. I'm talking to your producer now.
All right, appreciate. Hopefully they'll pay you a little more than we get paid for doing this
appreciate
show.
Appreciate the call, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
And for the rest of the listeners, go to our website and look at the portfolio, the Hanson McLean Portfolio Stress Test. It is on our website.
Money Matters Stress Test,
And you can actually stress test your portfolio yourself.
Yeah, and if you'd like to be like Steve and join us at Hanson McLean here, you want to join the radio program, it's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON, and numerically it's 888-242-6766. You are listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, visit moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766.
Hey, if you're listening to our show on podcast and you'd like to be a caller into the show, don't hesitate to give us a call.
That's
at 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. You got it.
Yeah, we'll take your call. We record sometimes during the week, so we'd love to take your call.
Taking the financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
Yep, we do try to take the...
I like the Blues Brothers. Love the Blues Brothers. When I was in high school, this won't be a long life story. It'll be a relatively short life story. The Blues Brothers and the people in the producer's booth, they're all sub-35.
John loves the Blues Brothers. How old are you, John? The producer here. John's 28.
John is 28. Loves the Blues Brothers.
He's got bright colored socks and 2 days of stubble, by the way.
Yes. And but I heard an interview the other day with Dan Aykroyd on it, and he was talking about the making of the movie, The Blues Brothers. Quite interesting.
That is, sounds fascinating.
It was.
Wow.
It was.
Thank you for sharing that. This is a financial program, Hanson McLean's Money Matters, where
can
we
you
talk
just
about.
Fake like you're interested? Just like as a courtesy?
I did enjoy the Blues Brothers.
Okay, well, fake like you're interested in my story, not in the Blues Brothers. My story. Fake like.
Your life. Wow, Pat. How do you feel internally? I mean, when you sit down and really reflect upon your life and the impact the Blues Brothers had on your life as in those formative
All
years
right, let's
in
go.
Your teen
We're
years.
A financial show.
What year did
Thank
you graduate
you.
High school?
1981.
81. So...
I've been out of high school 35 years.
That was about the time, and you have 35 years of experience or 1 year?
35 times. So. There we go.
what year was the Blues Brothers?
It's like 80.
I don't know. Anyway, why are we talking about the Blues Brothers? Because Pat wanted to talk about it, and we pretty much just talk about what Pat wants to talk about. Anyway, Hanson McLean's Money Matters is a financial program. We talk about things that are of interest to, we believe, all of our listeners in the area of finance. I did see an interesting statistic this week. Trying to think where I saw this. But I know it's true because I've seen it a number of other places. 46% of Americans don't pay income tax, because that study was out again this week. Half Americans don't pay any federal income taxes. 46% of Americans have less than $5,000 in liquid assets.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, that's because you've been a financial advisor.
Oh, I guess that's probably
true. I'm not telling you. Pat forgets that we're on a program here.
I forgot. Yeah. Get a little comfortable.
That doesn't surprise me. Okay, then. Good. As long as you're not
46% of Americans.
My goal
of
here
adult
in
Americans,
sharing some of this information is so that our listeners can benefit, not so you can benefit.
46% of adult Americans.
That's right. Have less than $5,000 in liquid assets.
And 93.
It might be American. I think it's American households. Less than $5,000 in liquid assets.
And 93.2% of statistics are made up.
Half Americans, the median net worth of the average for the average American family. So this is half above and half below, is about $9,800 net worth.
Wow!
You figure a third of people.
But that's the median.
The median. A third of people don't own their own home.
The average is probably much higher.
You throw in Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and a couple of those guys. They skew it up. Yeah.
Yeah. But that'll change them.
What'll change?
That'll change. I don't. According to people running for office, that's
Oh, my.
Oh, yes. Interesting. And we're not going to get too much into that. But
anyway.
Interesting. Interesting.
If you'd like to join the program, a question for us at Hanson McLean, you can call 1-888-2-HANSON, and we'll get you on the air. It's 888-2-HANSON. And let's go to Colorado. We're going to talk with Peggy. Peggy, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for joining the program.
Okay. My question for you is, I'm about 18 months from being able to retire as a teacher in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get my ducks in a row. And one of the things that I'm looking into is I want to know, obviously, I'm going to get my full retirement from teaching. I also have paid many years into Social Security because I've had at least two careers. And so I'm wondering if you know how many years I need to have worked for Social Security in order to also get full benefits from Social Security.
40 quarters,
so
10
years. Is it possible?
Well,
Is it possible to get a full retirement from my teacher retirement and a full retirement from Social Security?
If you've been, I assume you have not been paying, I'm not an expert on Colorado's teacher's plan, but I assume you have not been paying into Social Security while you've been paying into the state teacher's retirement system. Is that correct?
I have not.
Okay. Okay.
But I have not taught consistently.
How many years have you been in it? So when you go to the Social Security website.
Or they send you the statement.
How many years or quarters have you paid into Social Security?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
You've had more than 10 years.
I will tell you, I got more than 20 years in Social Security.
So here's the...
I got 20 years in teaching.
Okay.
You're definitely vested for Social Security, but there will be an offset. So that estimate they send you, they did years ago, then they quit sending you, then the Social Security Administration started sending it again with the last year or two, that says here's what you can expect to receive at retirement. I think there's a little notation on that that says expect an offset if you are participating in a government plan. There will be an offset on that. And it's a very convoluted formula. Matter of fact, I did a webinar on just Social Security, recently updated it with the changes on it, that delves into this sum as well as other issues on Social Security. At our website, moneymatters.com, that you can go to later, but at moneymatters.com, you'll see the webinar on Social Security to go into it. And to be frank on it, it's going to go into a high level on this issue. But what happens is those years that you didn't pay into it, I mean, the logic behind it, whether you like it or not, the logic behind it is that, look, you weren't paying into it for all those years. And because you weren't paying into it, you were paying into a different program, we're going to take an offset on Social Security from what you're receiving in your pension.
And it could be quite substantial too.
Yes. But what have you been a teacher for? What grade?
Oh, and I teach elementary, but I've taught many things. Right now I'm doing English as a second language. I'm doing gifted and talented. I'm doing intervention. I taught 10 years abroad as well.
Oh, you did?
In Russia.
Wow.
But I was working for, most of that overseas stuff, I was working for the State Department. So at that time, I was paying in Social Security.
Were you an employee of the State Department?
Deeper.
Okay. Now, so this is I'm glad we actually had
the State Department. Yes.
And how many years
did you employee?
How many years did you have at the State Department?
Well, probably about 7.
Okay. And did you vest with them?
You probably need 3 more years.
Well, I don't know if I did or not.
So here's something that I think if you were sitting in our office, what we would recommend is you actually dig into your State Department pension and see if you vested. And investing may have been dependent upon 5 years and your age at the time.
Probably 10,
but you may want to actually return to work for the State Department in some capacity in order to,
part-time or something.
To vest that pension. Because most pensions
that's exactly why I'm calling.
Okay.
Find out if I should quit teaching and do my Social Security some more.
Oh, well, it's federal pension.
It's the federal pension that we're interested in.
Department.
The Social Security it's not going to move the needle. It's not going to move the needle. It's the federal pension from... So what it would allow you to do is... Most pensions are predicated on age and years of service, and the older you are, the higher the payout. So I would contact Human Resources at the State Department and ask them, first of all, are you vested? And if you're not vested, what would it take to be vested and what the benefit would look like? And you might find those are the most profitable 3 years that you will ever work. We just had a client in our office. I was talking to an advisor today. We had a client today. He wanted to retire. We had him stay on his payroll for another 15 months, and his pension, the lump sum pension, increased by $110,000. Was that 120? It was over 100. That's what you want to do. If you were sitting in any of our offices, we would talk about the investments and how awesome we were and how we're going to help you and all that. Then I would say, but the most important part of the conversation is the work you have to do.
Peggy, you would really benefit by meeting with a certified financial planner. A good financial advisor will digs into these things because this is where true value can be had, helping you navigate through these. Because we've helped a lot of clients over the years on these sort of issues, whether it's a federal employee or military service.
Or someone that came in who had terminal cancer and we got them off pension. actually get a lump sum.
But for Peggy's situation, a good certified financial planner has done this sort of work, and that's where we highly recommend you talk to a good financial advisor.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you go about finding somebody?
Well, we're a financial advisory firm.
I mean, somebody that I can trust.
Yeah.
So, full disclosure, we are a financial advisory firm, and you'll hear ads during our program. But, we promote ourselves during the ads. This show, we really want about helping people and not have it sound like we're just trying to promote our own firm. So
what you want to do
listen
is,
to the.
So what you want to do is go to moneymatters.com, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, and look at the webinar called Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits, and it explains what to look for in a financial advisor. Most importantly, how to avoid the bad ones. The second thing you want to look at is when you go to broker check, as this one recommends, is you look at the educational background and you look at the compliance record. And then the last thing you look for is to make sure that they're being paid as a fiduciary, which means they have to put your interest above their own. Doesn't mean they don't charge. It means that they're not selling commission products that leave you out in the woods. So that is, I am so glad we had that conversation.
And by the way, if you listen to the ads we have that run during our program, you'll hear our phone number for that. So.
But, and you know, I've listened to your show many times, but I didn't know you were in Colorado.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep. Denver.
Hey, good luck on your last 18 months. All right. And enjoy. And boy, we so appreciate people like yourself who been helping our kids over the years. Because I would always remember when my kids were little, I'd go in and visit the classroom and think, oh my goodness,
that's a hard job.
So anyway, Peggy, thanks for calling Hanson McLean. And if you'd like to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, maybe you got a question like Peggy does. It's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-H-A-N-S-O-N. And stick around, we'll be back in real quickly. This is Hanson McLean.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're here with us on this fantastic weekend. And as we're talking about money issues, and there was a study that I read recently. This was a study, academic research done by three researchers were from Texas Tech. Texas Tech, obviously in Texas, the university.
Well, you're showing off. You're showing off how smart you are now.
You know, I can put those things together.
Texas Tech. They have Texas.
They have quite a large financial advisory.
They put out some good stuff.
They train financial planners, and I think you can get a doctorate in financial planning there, whatever. But they conducted some research on retirement planning calculators. You know, those free calculators you can go online and you say, all right. Is retirement feasible for me? So you plug in this information, you answer some questions about yourself. And they tested 36 different tools, online tools, these free tools. They concluded only 11 of them were accurate.
What? I don't understand. You mean like the math was wrong?
No, they concluded that, you're no problem, you can retire. They were overly optimistic. 11 out of 36 they trusted, the others they did not.
Oh.
So according to this study.
Do we have one of those on our website?
Ours is one of the 11. No, I'm just kidding. No. Well, we use a unique process. Our 7 personal decision point process is a little bit different.
Correct.
Because the challenge with all these calculators is based on so many assumptions.
Yeah, and you could, garbage in, garbage out.
And the reality is, look, for example, we've seen a lot of people talk about the 4% rule, which means if you retire and you withdraw 4% of your portfolio each year, and then you increase that by the rate of inflation, your withdrawal, by the rate of inflation each year, you've got a high probability of success throughout your lifetime, 87%.
Depending upon how the investments are managed.
Correct. Obviously, of course, this assumes you've got a broad, diversified portfolio with a proper investment strategy. So there's the 4%. But the reality is most people in retirement they don't just stick their head in the sand and ignore what's going on around them. So we found that even during the downturn, the economic downturn, the financial crisis, even those individuals, retirees that have had large portfolios, multi-million-dollar portfolios,
would change their behavior.
They changed their behavior. And I remember talking to someone said, they said, well, you don't think it's the right time to be going to Hawaii right now. And I said, well, you realize that it's not going to make any difference in your financial situation. I mean, these people, obviously, there's no way they would spend all their money in their lifetime. They said, yeah, but it just doesn't feel like it's the right time.
And well, there was probably a great time to go because things were on discount. It was a cheap time to go.
But we find that people in retirement, they just tend – and there are people who say, look, we were thinking about doing this, but instead of taking two trips this year, we're just going to take one.
People are more likely to take higher withdrawals in an up market than in a down market.
They are. They feel more comfortable about things. So that's one of the challenges with these calculators. It just puts everything in a box based on these assumptions, and it doesn't assume that there are humans involved.
Yeah, people with emotions.
And so our 7 personal decision point process that we use it has a different approach to looking at
personal decision points.
Yeah.
Not box decision points, personal decision points.
And I feel like I'm promoting myself again.
I did a webinar on it.
Yeah.
So if you go to our website, moneymatters.com, what do you mean you feel like you're promoting yourself again?
That's just, you know.
It's moneymatters.com.
Okay. Moneymatters.com gives you all the information on Hanson McClain's fantastic webinars and seminars and workshops and all that
you
stuff.
You want to take a call?
Yeah, 888-2-HANSON's the number. Again, 888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Cindy. Hi, Cindy. You're with Hanson McClain.
Hi. I have a question. I've been retired for 3 years. Next year, I'm eligible for Social Security, but I want to put it off as long as, you know, possible to start withdrawing. But my question is, when should I start withdrawing from my 457 account? Should I do it before I start drawing Social Security?
Boy, that is a great question.
That is a highly educated question. That is, that's a great question. Because for the rest of the listeners, this is what hope is going through Cindy's mind is that the longer I postpone Social Security, assuming they don't change the taxation or the qualifications for Social Security benefits, that benefit will increase by approximately 8% a year.
So if I wait till 70, I'll have a much larger benefit.
And if I don't think my portfolio is going to grow at 8% per year, then I'm probably better off using parts of my portfolio that...
If you're mostly concerned about your own lifetime income, not what's left
for your heirs. Yeah. Right. So,
correct.
Excuse me. Tell us a little bit about your pension and your 457. So, you're receiving a pension right now from the state of California, I assume. How much are you getting approximately a month?
The gross is just over $5,000 a month.
Okay. And are you married?
Yes.
Okay. And is your husband working or he get a pension as well?
He's self-employed.
Okay. And what is the 457 value?
Like $100,000.
And is your home paid for by chance?
Next year.
Okay. Oh, congrats.
So
your husband will have no pension.
So what liquid cash is out there other than the 457? Does your husband have some money in a SEP IRA, or do you have money in a brokerage account or savings? If you used up this $100,000 in the 457, would that be all the liquid cash you had?
No.
Okay.
There's still savings.
And approximately the same size?
I think it's about $50,000.
Okay.
And will your husband, I'm assuming obviously he qualifies for Social Security, will he have any other sort of retirement assets or will a business to sell or anything like that?
When he sells the business or sells the property that the business is on, then he'll have income from that.
And will that be a substantial amount or we're trying to figure out.
So here's what our fear is. If you start Social Security at 62 and you take out.
You draw your 457.
And you draw your 457. Let's say you start at $1,000 a month and you do it until age 70.
then you're going to use up the vast majority of your liquid cash in that 457. You're going to spend it down. And it may be something. So that what we're trying to do is determine how much liquid cash is going to, because you want some liquidity in retirement. You don't want
late '70s, eighties.
You want, you know, $100,000, $200,000 in liquidity there. And it's not an either or. It's, hey, I'm going to take some money out of, I can start taking money out of my 457, and every year I can reexamine whether I'm going to start Social Security. But with the absence of, liquidity, I'd be afraid to use this whole $100,000 is income prior to taking Social Security.
I was worried about the tax part of it. If I wait to start withdrawing it at 70 and then I'm getting Social Security too, then am I paying more taxes?
I wouldn't worry about that because your required minimum distributions and whatnot are not going to be that great.
Not only that,
most likely your husband will no longer be working 9 years from now.
Hopefully.
So if he sold the building, how much liquid cash would you have at that point in time? If he sold the property,
I think the property is worth between $500,000 and $600,000.
Okay, so you just made me much more comfortable. So Cindy, I would actually start a distribution from the 457.
I like the idea for you. Now, of course, your home's going to be paid off next year, so you won't have. I mean, ideally, if you can leave it alone.
So you know what
you can leave it alone as long as possible, that's your best thing.
If you find your
cash flow is a little tight and you're tempted to start Social Security next year, we like the idea of taking money out of the 457
or spending this $50,000.
Some of the money in the bank.
The money in the bank.
Uh-huh.
And using that
But the tax ramifications wouldn't be that great if I waited. Because I wouldn't have to take up that much.
We're not worried about the taxes.
Well, I actually think you're probably in a higher tax rate now than you're going to be in retirement.
And that's why I'd use that $50,000 in the bank before I used the 457. And remember, the 457, the deferred compensation, is 100% liquid, so you could get at it if you need be. So if you were sitting in our office, we would say, how much do you think you need once, and maybe you take the $50,000 out, pay the home off now so you don't have a house payment, and maybe that's enough.
Yeah, I really don't need to pay off the house now. I mean, I'm not getting anything from it, so.
Okay.
Well, then we like the idea of you deferring your Social Security as long as possible. We don't see a need to draw down the 457 today. Unless you absolutely need the cash. If you need the cash, I agree with Pat. If you drew down the savings first, that'd be beneficial. We are out of time. We apologize for that. We are here every weekend at the same very hour. And so if you've been a longtime listener, you know where to find us. If you're new, glad you are new. We've been broadcasting for more than 20 years. You can get a podcast of this program. You can either go to moneymatters.com. You get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Or go to iTunes. If you go to iTunes, search Hanson McLean. Hanson McLean, McClain. Search Hanson McLean. If you're a regular podcast listener, make sure you like us. Whatever you do,
please.
Give us good ratings, that sort of stuff. We're out of time. It's been great being here with you. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
Hey, if you're listening to our show on podcast and you'd like to be a caller into the show, don't hesitate to give us a call.
That's
at 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. You got it.
Yeah, we'll take your call. We record sometimes during the week, so we'd love to take your call.